everybody. Welcome back to the Gods Will Not Save You, The Wire Revisited. I'm Willie.
Hey, this is Jakob, and this is a podcast where the hosts do a deep read of each episode of The Wire. And yeah, Willie.
Yep. Anchor.fm/thegodswillnotsaveyou/support in case you want to donate anything. You all know the drill. We're rounding, you know, winding down. So
yeah,
we only got 5 episodes left. But yeah, with that, why don't we just jump right into our discussion of season 5, episode 6, the Dickensian aspect.
Talk about jumping.
Oh yeah. Omar is still nowhere to be found. He's doing Spider-Man shit according to Marlowe. They're looking everywhere for him, and turns out he was hiding in the janitor's closet the whole time. But yeah. What do we make of this whole like manhunt thing, and how, you know, we got a monk posing as a as a detective, Snoop going into the hospital, Chris and Savino just slamming trunks everywhere belligerently.
Yeah. Well, about that, I kept thinking Chris is gonna hit or like punch Savino in the face, but yeah. You know, he's, you know, Banga is such a good actor that, you know, his rage just like trails off at the last second. He just is like just slams the trunk or throws something.
Yeah, I'm gonna go throw a knife at the floor of a random apartment later to let out my anger, or my hiding spot, wherever that is. They're located with the broken laundry machine.
Oh, okay, very interesting.
Is it?
It's all the washers matter.
Yeah. So blessed.
So yeah. Also, I found it funny that Snoop had a notepad, and she had all these hospitals scrawled on it, and then instead of Sinai, it just says Siani.
Or Sinai.
Yeah. So this is like the writers doing their best to always keep on being the white dudes making black people. I mean, always. Commentary on the failed schools. But also just you're looking for someone and it's just your brother or whatever who is probably high, but you're all blood, like you're wearing a bloody shirt. Like, it's not weird.
Yeah, for like how like diligent they are in their like, you know, citywide manhunt for this guy. We have like a monk just like, oh, what? Oh, the lady? Yeah, she's fine, whatever. And just like walks off from talking to them.
But he could possibly, was he wearing his bulletproof vest, and would it have been more realistic or like socially accepted that, you know, he's a cop and, you know. Back the monk. Yeah. All monks are bad.
Yeah. So what... what is the deal with this whole like taking notes on criminal conspiracy and stuff? Like, you know, Stringer was against it, but now like Snoop is copying what Omar was doing and like taking notes on all of their criminal proceedings. Like, what's the consensus here? Good strategy, bad strategy.
Like Omar or Shamrock, or did,
well, it's Omar, like, oh, remember Omar in the first season, like Omar's taking notes on a,
yeah, exactly.
The drug dealing.
You know, once in a while, you gotta just make sure you're, got all, like, it's hard to think of every hospital in Baltimore just off the top, right?
Yeah, that's true.
So that could be challenging. I don't know. I really don't know. What do you think?
No, it's just something interesting that I thought I'd bring up. It seems like a little internal conflict that is going on between the Wire universe drug gamers.
What's up with the Spider-Man simulation lives on? That's a note that was included. What is that about? Did we talk about that?
Well, because Marlo says, you know, that's some Spider-Man shit right there when he is like in disbelief that Omar jumped all those stories and got away without, you know, getting killed.
But what? Oh, I think, damn, this is not the best way to lead into that. Oh, like the simulation, yada, yada, yada. And we were talking about is since this is a real deal, you know, real thing that Donnie did, and it's part of like his web of lies. I mean, simulation. So it's a spy. Okay. So where does Spider fit into all this? What if he had been there?
Oh, man. I don't know.
Miles like, that's some Spider-Man shit. Also, I heard that Spider beat up Mike's friend, Dookie. What the hell is up with it? Yeah. No, but does something about, oh yeah, I mean, I was going to make a joke, like, we see, like, you know, recently Marlo was all excited about wanting to go party, and he's showing a bit more emotion, or like he's very, you know, incredulous, or just kind of like, oh wow, that's kind of impressive what he did there. I mean, any thoughts on that as far as Marlo showing more emotion? Or not.
I mean, he's probably feeling more comfortable than ever with like his position of power, especially like within the co-op now that Joe is gone. He's kind of just ordering everybody around and like dictating the price of the incoming drugs and whatnot. And he's kind of like emotionally manipulating everybody into like making Omar the enemy. So I feel like, he probably is concerned about, you know, Omar getting away with it and running rampant. Doesn't know yet that like he's sullying his name throughout town, but he probably is like a little bit concerned in terms of safety. But at the same time, he's got a little bit more bravado this time around, and he's ordering people around and stuff.
Just like that's like rubbing it in to Chris, like, ah, oh, we missed our shot, now he's gonna be at us. And Chris is like, and he's kind of just like thinking, that's what you get, bitch, for like not coming to AC with me. You wanted to check on your people.
Yeah,
you don't have feelings, you can't love. I've created a monster here, Chris. By the way, you didn't do your job.
Yeah, he's being he's being very dictatorial in this moment.
Nice guy.
But also, like, I mean, in classic, like, Wire fashion, like, you know, obviously, in a sense, we're rooting for Omar to get out of this situation. We see him, like, knocked down and using a push broom as a crutch, and he's limping everywhere. But at the same time, like, he, like, has resources at his disposal. Like, he could come to McNulty for protection or something, but instead he's just, like, waging a one-man war against the whole criminal organization. And it's, like, it's one of those times where, like, no, Omar, don't do that. Like, you're making the wrong decision. Stop. You're only hurting yourself. Yeah. Like, is this the season where we see, like, Omar and McNulty kind of just bucking against the institution in catastrophic ways, maybe?
Yeah, I mean, it does. I mean, for the police, the consequences aren't as severe.
Yeah.
Because that's his game. But yeah, a little bit, out of character for sure. But that's what you get when you kill the blind man.
Yeah.
Like, let's think of some scenarios here. You know, like, what if Omar has, like, access to Facebook back in the day? Like, what does this beef look like, you know? It doesn't look like shit because he's not a net banger. Omar's in the streets. Yeah. You think that Marlo and them would be, like, dissing on, like, making YouTube diss tracks and stuff, or...
Maybe. Yeah.
But anyways, let's not get into hypotheticals here. We stick to the you know, content in our project. I mean, first of all, how did no one think to go to this like facilities, like the broom closet or the washroom. How does this tie in to the washing machine and Chris's bacon, you know? It's like in the...
But then also, like, no maintenance people ran into Omar there, like, while, like, nursing a broken leg or whatever. Like,
I mean, it gets... it seems pretty well maintained, but I don't know like what their ships are, you know.
Yeah.
But there's like, where is this? I mean, okay. First of all, Norris was leaving, and he was like, "Someone's got to do something about this kid on their goddamn these kids." Yeah, I'll say it. He's a kid on their motorbikes, right? I don't care if one of them gets killed. We're not downtown. I don't care. Okay, peace. But I mean, there's just a huge shootout. So I mean, I'd imagine that like all the management was like, "Hey, take the day off." You know, there's like potentially like killers running around here.
Yeah,
I don't know. I can't imagine what my building would look like if there's like a huge shootout and some dude just jumped out of the window like into the Shakey's parking lot. And then like, would there still be the groundskeeper? Because the building groundskeeper, he dipped like 4 or 5 months ago and just told us, "Good luck with the building." And we're like, what?
Damn, maybe Esperanza Apartments had a similar...
Yeah, like, good, peace out. And then ever since then, man, I tell you, it's been downhill.
Yeah.
I mean, haven't had a shootout, but I can tell you, I don't want to talk about it. No, I'm just kidding. It's fine.
Sorry, man, that you're surrounded by those slumlords.
Slumlords. Yeah, Esperanza slumlords.
Yeah.
But anyways, I mean, no one found him. Good. I mean, good, right?
Yeah. If anybody out there has access to the, you know, time cards of the maintenance staff of the Esperanza apartments back in 2007, you know, drop us a line.
For sure. Yeah.
We want to verify the realism of this particular episode.
Yeah.
Anything else you want to talk about with this? I know you were you're a little concerned about a little kid being involved in the re-up where Omar torched a car.
Oh, yeah. The schools, man. Not the best thing. You know. I mean, I'm not like the kids got away, but you know, we know that this is something that Omar's aware of because back in the day he'd be like, "Man, it's not even the first day of school yet," you know, and like the kids use their backpacks and stuff. And I remember some like, you know, assembly back in high school, and then one of the guys who was giving the speech, it was pretty weird. It was like he was like a poet, and then he was talking about how, you know, back in the day he was used to like transport the drugs for his parent, like his dad maybe, but didn't know it. So it's like, does this kid know what's going on? I mean, then the poet guy at the assembly also started making like references to like girls who aren't careful are gonna get like ran in a train or something. Oh, God. And there's like it's like high school, and there's like freshmen's like, "Oh, she a hoe and I'm like, what is happening right now,
man?
Good old
public school.
Public school assemblies to like teach kids lessons, and then it just turns into the kids going crazy.
Lester, if you want to talk shit about, you know, the public school system in our country, then I'll have you know that we learned about train running way back in the day.
We learned about the important stuff, man. Like how to not get a train ran on you.
Oh my gosh. Isn't that it's so crazy to think about, like a lot of the stuff that was like presented as like educational or kind of just like tossed aside as like not that big of a deal in the days like prior to like our country's kind of like awakening on how bad like sexual assault and harassment really is and how like systemic of a problem it is.
Exactly. Yeah. Just very casual references to these things to like minors and stuff. But anyway, it's like, the kid, he doesn't get shot. So that's good. But he probably witnesses like a family member or someone.
Yeah.
Getting, yeah, almost their leg blown off.
Just caught in the midst of Omar's reign of terror.
Yeah, he's definitely not honoring his word to Bonk, but yeah, you know. What is he doing? I mean, we're going to get to Bonk and all the police.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, what do you think about all that? And I want to, here's a question I have for you. Just read something a little interesting before coming over. What do you think Omar's ultimate, you know, goal is in his, war in this in the context of this season and this episode, you know, that he's waging with Marlo? What do you think like the end result is as far as like Omar's goal?
I feel like he's just not thinking clearly at this point, and he's just motivated by the, you know, for lack of a better word, blind rage of his blind friend getting mercilessly killed. Oh. So I just think like he's like only seeing red at this point.
Yeah.
I don't really know like if he has like any strong motivations other than that. Like, it's kind of a downfall we see of him in this season. Still clever though, like robbing Fat Face Risk with a beer bottle, like
Fat Face Risk.
Did I say Risk?
That was a fat faced Risk.
Yeah.
With just a beer bottle.
Yeah, he's taking
the Heineken.
Yeah, he's taking a fat faced Risk with fat.
Hey, watch out, yo, Heineken coming, yo. No, that's a Michelob. That's a low calorie. Get it instead of like a high calorie.
Oh,
like the higher calorie beer, the higher the caliber the fake gun would have.
Okay.
Oh, wow. Yo, shit. I'm still light coming, yo. Oh, don't worry about it.
Oh, my goodness.
Man. Me need beer. Not put to my head like it's a real gun, because that's
scary.
That's risky.
Yeah.
But I was reading that Michael K. Williams was saying that, you know, he didn't want a shoot out with Marlo. He didn't want to rob him, really. He just wanted Marlo to come to the streets to have an old fashioned fist fight.
Yeah, I can see that. I mean,
that's where it was headed. I was kind of amazed.
I mean, he blew up the money from the robbery. Like, you can tell he's like not really motivated by any material gains at this point. It's just all a big old pissing contest at this point.
So literally, like they could have gone to the arena, like the what is it, the like downtown, or where a certain somebody cop used to love to watch MMA fights. Let's just say this cop loved Twisted Tees. I think it was Royal Farms Arena. And they could have just had a Marlo Omar MMA fight And just solve the war, you know, end it, peace, man, increase the peace, man.
I mean, if that were to happen, I would, nothing against Jamie Hector and his abilities, but I feel like Omar is more used to getting his hands dirty in this. I mean, well, we don't know about like Marlo's rise up through the ranks and everything. He probably,
you saw how he hand to hand like combated that dude, like, when we get to the final.
Yeah
and it's pretty slick.
Never mind, I don't want
it. Would have been like, I think Omar would have definitely been like push the pace, cardio, like going for takedowns and stuff, and Marlo's just like super slick, like,
yeah,
just pulling back, you know, countering, maybe like, you know, some crazy like arm bars, jujitsu.
Maybe we'll start like a Twitter poll or something. Yeah. Like, who would win in a fist fight?
Man. Dude, who would win in a fight, bro? Slim Charles? Didn't we do this years ago? We were like, we got to get to the good content stuff. Like, what people really want to hear. Like, who would win in a fight, bro? Kirk or Slim Charles?
This is like the exact type of like hypothetical thinking that Simon detests. Yeah.
But this is grounded in research, in knowledge, man. This is literally from Truth Be Told, written by one of his favorite, I don't know, favorite, there are some errors. I even came across one where in this episode, since we're on the subject, in the review, you know, it's like, okay, they found the sealed indictments at Joe's house, but it was really
his shop. Yeah.
Everyone knows that. But, I mean, great guys, you know, Rafael Alvarez, a.k.a. Raffier, coming through with this, you know, great
book.
It's a great, like, I would have never, I swear I never read that before. I mean, I haven't read the whole book, like, consistently through. I mean, sparsely, like I jump around, you know, but never noticed that Michael K. Williams even said that part about Omar's motivation. So, hey, man,
that could have just been like an internal actor thing that he was using to fuel his performance. And, you know, hey, you know what, whatever you got to do to get there, more power to you. So
it's like, crazy.
Yeah. He was like R.I.P. probably like the one true, like, quote unquote method actor of the show, like based on like reports of how deep he got into character and all that. And, you know, does the accent pretty good. And like, man, tragic.
Man. All right.
You want to get into Carcetti's storyline?
Carcetti's storyline. Carcetti's doing the Dem thing.
Can you elaborate on that a little bit?
Well, no, I just like got to build something and put your name on it just like all the others did before him, like Tommy, you know, did William. Charles Center and your guy, William Donald. William Donald.
He's my guy.
A.K.A. not Meek Will, because he put his name on Harbor Place. William Donald Schaefer.
Yeah.
He was a Democrat, right? Or, yeah, I think they all.
Yeah. But this is this like another example of like the simulation folding in on itself? Because he mentions O'Malley's name, even though he may or may not have been the inspiration for the character. Like, where are we?
Yeah, it is weird, especially the way, like, he says it's super, he's like, O'Malley, like, very Irish. And they did Inner Harbor East.
Yeah.
Him and Schmoke. But, yeah, this is weird. I don't know. I mean, it's, like, that's what they did. I guess it's kind of along the lines of, you know, typical neo-lib stuff, right? Like,
yeah.
Let's take the taxpayer dollars and develop attractions so it looks nice when people are driving, you know, through Baltimore on their way to their, you know, PG County or Montgomery County suburban neighborhood.
Yeah.
But it's let's abandon the people that actually live, like, you know, live here.
Yeah. Like the main, one of the main characters of season two, who Krawcheck callously refers to as just nobody, Nick Sabatka.
Yeah. Yeah. So let me run this little riddle by you. So city protect, but he attack them.
But
he's protect and attack. Nah, but I mean, he's in witness protection still, or does that like expire? Because he's just out there like, oh, yeah, big balls, Nick. Fuck you, man. I'm out here with my guy, Nat LBR.
I mean, I feel like if he was still under like witness protection, like after that little outburst, Carcetti probably would have had a line on like what Nick Sabatka's involvement was with like the whole criminal conspiracy with the port a few years back. I don't know. I feel like they just kind of like, once they realized that the Greeks aren't anywhere to be found, they just kind of abandoned him.
Yeah.
Like,
but, I mean, he's getting pulled aside and patted down. So do we assume that, you know, Nick's going to get his ID taken and ran through the system? Like, they're going to check on him, like, oh, like how they would any other person, like, oh, well, you got warrants, like, because they're always looking to, you know, lock people up and stuff. But I got, who would win in a brawl, FFR or LBR?
LBR is, oh, Lil Big. That's a pretty fair fight, I gotta say.
Nah, man. Fat Face regularly get hit a few times. He's like, your mom's a bitch. Like, tell her I said, all right, I'll tell her. Like he did with his Marlo. Like, he's like, tell Marlo that he's a little bitch. He ain't man enough to. All right, I'll tell him.
By the way, did you kill Joe?
Yeah, it's like very, it's like getting a gun, his own weapon held to his head. He's just like, I don't care. I got strip clubs.
I mean, you know, going back to the whole co-op situation, a lot of people probably just feel like they're on a ship without a captain, or they're like a man without a country. Like they don't have allegiance to anybody at this point because, you know, they all looked up to Prop Joe and. Marlo's just kind of doing his thing, but
yeah, what's up with the, you know, stuff on the harbor or Carchetti? I mean, we can go any which way. I mean, we're so like versatile.
Yeah, but Krawchik is dealing with the PTSD of being around you know, Stringer getting murdered and whatnot by just he's doing his own self-inflicted therapy by, you know, displacing poor residents in favor of gentrifying poor neighborhoods, or you know,
or just like, what was Nat yelling about, like something about like you're Locust Point. I mean, I'm assuming like shipping, like if not poor people's like houses,
yeah,
he's like their jobs and, yeah, away, their job
income,
because yeah, I mean Westport, you know, tough.
But it just goes to show you like the whole fear of God that we saw in his face after like the shooting the end of season 3. He's totally forgotten about that now and is just going back to being his old callous self. Oh, he's nobody. People matter less and less each day. He's just all dollar signs in his eyes.
Yeah.
Homeless people don't vote.
Yeah, they don't.
Yeah.
So, but I'm protecting them ostensibly. So,
I mean, sure.
So vote for me, like, about that. Yeah. Sounds solid, right? What do you think about his speech? Pretty, like, progressive, right? So he is super progressive.
I mean, it's just like I don't know, like it is in this kind of like a commentary on like how the flowery oration or the, you know, purple prose or whatever he enacts in like times of crises, like he did when talking about Hamsterdam at the end of season 3, and kind of like how he's doing now at this press conference, is just like a cold, politically calculated move to make him seem more viable for the governor's seat. Like, I don't know. It's very cynical the way, like the context behind this. Like, it does look really good, but yeah. One interesting thing that was pointed out in the commentary with Seath Man and George Pelicanos is that, like,
it's a commentary episode. Damn, dude. Do tell.
But it's like, you know, all those microphones like sit so big in the frame, they kind of like are almost like in proportion with Tommy's head, they like almost kind of like outmatch him. It's kind of like almost, you know, a symbolic commentary on how the media plays such a big role in shaping people's perceptions of the real stories to the point where it like distorts things and, you know, places things out of proportion and doesn't really give credence to the whole idea that everybody is just treating the homeless community in kind of like a parasitic way and they're all using this crisis to advance their own agenda.
Nah, sounds familiar. Yeah, the simulation lives.
Yeah, they didn't have Bubs in this episode, but they still found a way to.
Yeah.
You know.
But they don't have bubbles.
That issue.
Only bobbles.
What? Bobbles?
Like Mr. Bobbles, right? Like what's his name? Larry or like the hobo that we'll get to.
Yeah. Oh man.
Oh, that's gonna be me this weekend. Nah. A lot of live sports. Hulu has live sports.
Oh, nice. But yeah, so Carcetti basically pays lip service to this issue, but is not willing to give more funding to the resources that they would need to bring the quote unquote serial killer down. And McNulty's kind of frustrated by all of it.
Yeah. Well, they want the cases solved, but not the cost.
Right.
How does this tie into season one? The cost?
Oh.
It doesn't at all, maybe. But, you know, it's like the same title, right?
Yeah. I mean, all the pieces matter, man.
Oh, yeah. I used to think this... Nah, Seath Man seems pretty cool. He's the guy who did... what's the...
Five Deep Breath. Yeah.
All right, we gotta
get the idea.
Let's not breathe too heavily. could be. Nah, you're good, man.
Yeah,
we're good. I think I'm good.
Yeah. So, and you know, basically after that press conference, Norm and Chief of Staff Steintorf, or Chief of the
Evil Budget Prez.
Evil Budget Prez, but his official title. Yeah, Chief of Staff Michael Steintorf, basically just, you know, reinforcing what we already talked about, like, oh, this is a great strategic advantage of you, and you're making the Republicans look bad, and, you know.
Oh, yeah, own typical lib shit.
It, yeah. We see you.
Yeah.
We hear you.
Yeah.
We're letting you die in the streets.
Yeah, we got a performance here for you.
Oh, my God.
Gather around.
So with that, do you have anything else you'd like to say, or can we move on to police?
Oh, I mean, could you say that like the Republicans, this is dumb. I was going to try to make some joke about like safety net. Someone could have used one at Esperanza, but you know,
yeah,
who needs that? Like he doesn't need a safety net. He's like, you know, he should be championed by Carcetti's ops, because he's like standing on his own, you know.
Yeah,
it's like rugged, like Atlas Shrugged stuff.
Rugged individualism. Yeah. I don't.
That's why libertarians like this. We gotta. I can't understand that stuff with bubbles and the, like.
Yeah.
Like he's a individual, and like, yeah, drug war terrible, man.
Yeah.
Other than that. It's nice having you on our show, Simon. Anyways, now we get to my favorite part of the show, police stuff. No, I'm just kidding. I'm in hell. I watched like a couple of episodes of First 48 because like, Willie, you sent me a really great article about, you know, the book Homicide and how it's aging.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah, it's not something that like, oh, let me rewatch like cop shows to learn about how like manipulative and like, you know, just, you know, bad intention homicide cops can be.
Yeah.
But no, we don't need all that. And you know, the book itself is very like I know that a lot of the takes that I probably provided early on in this project, like, oh, did you know this from Homicide, like, you know, but I think that the context of where we were coming from is not to like you know, not speak on how it can be problematic. It's just, you know, it provides a lot of background for like one of our favorite shows. So it's exciting to learn about these things. Let's not like, you know, gloss over the fact that some of the people who are even represented in the show and also like act in the show were involved in some really shady stuff.
Yeah. You know,
in David Simon's reporting. But as always, he
apologized for it. Okay.
Hey, you know, it's like, what, you know, it's Landsman here. I may have yelled at, you know.
Yeah.
I verbally abused people. Your mother was drunk.
Eating too much of that jail food.
Yeah. Yeah. You're going to give me lip. Now you're going to go eat some jail food.
Oh, God. Yeah. Treme is far more anti-police.
Yeah, we're going to do our crossovers. I mean, we basically just said the quiet part out loud for two potential follow-up projects. Like right. Carcetti's press conference ties into another like story about a mayor in their past, you know, political, like where they would fall on a compass test at the end of the day. And yeah, some ACAB, Willie's favorite subject.
Nah.
Remember, it's AMAB. All monks are bad. AMAB.
Yeah.
Nah, but yeah, these cops, man, Bunk is working murders.
Yeah.
And I just got to say, it's interesting after reading that article and then thinking back and like, you know, like I said, being in hell, watching a couple episodes of First 48 and like seeing Bunk's behavior in this episode, like, you know, trying to do what he feels is right, which solve these murders while McNulty's like lying on the build. But just to see how he approaches people like Randy, who's been screwed over, and he's like guilt tripping him and threatening him, and then going after Mike's like obviously like addicted mother, just in horrible situation.
Yeah.
And like without really any evidence, threatening her with like weeks of jail time, right. Just to like make her like to basically, you know, break her down even further into like a confession, and thinking maybe like, oh, these are how like they maybe obtain these false confessions, because they take advantage of people who are already in terrible predicaments. But anyways, Randy ain't having it. We could talk about that. Like, just something I wanted to...
No, that's a very valid point you bring up, and it kind of ties into the conversation that's presently going on about whether or not this show is propaganda based on a lot of the information that has come out, which you mentioned. But it is, you know, it's kind of easy to sympathize with Bunk in this situation, even if he is like kind of breaching like moral and or ethical codes by like, you know, putting his little flourishes on his interrogations, because he's really upset with Jimmy for one thing, but he doesn't want to rat him out because, you know, that's a cop code. You don't, you wouldn't snitch on your friends or whatever, even though Kima is going to break that.
But people in the community, like Randy and Mike's mom, they like they don't talk, you know, because in the streets, like, it's this no snitching thing that really like holds everyone back.
It's I mean, it's
but the
like,
cops do it too.
It's like easy to sympathize with Bunk in some sense, but like, come on, like, you really expect Randy to like want to talk to anybody, like, even after you know like everything that he's gone through, like. Yeah, it's a quite a depressing turn of events to see where Randy is at now, kind of just totally disillusioned with everything and probably just on a bad path from this point on. So it's a lot of shoddy police work going on. Lester finally confesses to Sidner that they're running the illegal wiretap.
Sidner's like, he's all excited, like, if this is what it takes, boss, you know, but Lester's tired, man.
Yeah,
but not gonna retire.
Yeah, one last job. I'm gonna be as shady as possible for my swan song.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know, it's a lot to think about. A lot of policing going on. But, you know, still better than anything on TV now.
Yeah, definitely.
As Willie would say. Yeah. But live sports, pretty good. Hulu has them. But anyways, yeah, I mean, stuff with the temp messing thing. How does that temp still have a job? Like, what does this speak to about, like, certain privileges maybe that people have? Like, oh, you just mess up, like, one of the... I mean, that was like a national news story.
Yeah, and the highest profile mass murder case.
Yeah,
and she didn't know what at all meant.
It's like, I mean, she's pretty good otherwise, but like, what else is she, like? Yeah. She's good at sifting through the made up murders and not the real stuff. So, I mean, I feel like if there was another type of person in that job, they would have been like fired immediately.
Yeah.
From like a different part of the city.
It's an unfortunate reality that from the show city. Touches upon.
I don't know if they're trying to make commentary. Maybe I'm thinking about, because what is white and black?
Oh my goodness. Anyway.
Hey, Willie. Hey, Forrest. Darius Hills is Odog's government name.
Yeah.
As is Devar Manigault, who was Bug's, you know, molester of a dad. I mean, at least with Mike.
Yeah.
I mean, that's what everyone infers, and even Bunk knows it.
Yeah. I like how this this episode kind of like answered one of the questions I had potentially, I can't remember exactly. I thought I had brought it up last season about like, oh, how does Proposition Joe like have access to all this, you know, grand jury stuff and these indictments? And I mean, this episode starts to kind of like answer that, that there's a leak somehow. And it's like actually kind of a big deal with the department, and not just like, you know, like earlier on in season four, it was almost kind of like presented as like, just like, you know, another little plot point or something, or just like one of Joe's like many connections that may or may not get explained. But of course, in true Simon and Burns fashion, they were just planting seeds, and now it's a tree.
It's a tree of deception. Yeah. Ronnie's like, oh, Bond, you're big shot Bond. Like, you want to try Clay on your own? You don't even know you have a leak. You're terrible, dude. And then he's like, I mean, the look on his face, what is that? Is it just like sheer, like, like he just, you know, overwhelmed with like the incompetence of his department? Or is he like, ah, like, I knew something like this, like he probably knew about it, but just would maybe like sweep it under the rug, and now he's like, ah, it came back to bite me. I should have dealt with this. What do you think? Like, is he this news to him, or?
I just think, yeah, he has limited amount of bandwidth to focus his resources on, and this is totally blindsiding him. It could have, you know, there could have been like breadcrumbs along the way that, you know, subtly alerted him to these problems, but now it's coming back to bite him in the ass. I mean, even Bunk knew about Proposition Joe.
Yeah, I mean, that just, like, how little it seemed like anyone else really knew about Prop Joe just speaks, like, the ignorance with Bond. It's like, oh, this guy who gets a small little, like, blurb in the paper, you know, is capable of pretty much taking down the entire, like, city justice department just with his, like, scheming. I mean, and he's, like, was the kingpin, basically.
Yeah.
So, you know, that it makes complete sense. Like, no one knows what the hell is going on.
But even Bunk knew who Prop Joe was, but he doesn't read the paper, or he doesn't read the...
Nah, he doesn't.
The little blurbs.
Like, dude, I mean, he just works murders, man. Yeah. That's what I do. I don't read newspaper stories, or do you think he votes? Like,
Bunk? Yeah. I mean, Wendell Pierce definitely does, for sure.
I am a true capitalist.
Yeah.
And I vote.
Yeah.
I mean, no, get great, a, like, you know,
great
Wendell
guy.
Pierce. You know, seems like a gay, like, you know, his own experiences and stuff, and
yeah,
great. Shaped him. So, like, you know, they find out that there's just like not really any texting going on.
Yeah.
These guys aren't texting because, like, we alluded to, school. Yeah. Systems,
and they're, I mean,
isn't like texting designed for people who like dropped out of school or got failed by educational systems though? Like, there's an entire, like, you know, like, people don't spell really.
Yeah, I mean, but this was this episode was written by Ed Burns like right around the time the texting was taking off, so yeah, they probably didn't know the long-term,
yeah, I guess,
stuff.
They're sending pics of, you know, we'll find out our coordinates, right?
Yeah. I mean,
they don't know anything.
I like how Lester had to use a magnifying glass to determine that Monk was holding the phone far away from him to then determine that he's looking at a picture.
He's like, y'all ever been to Vietnam? Like, you don't know how to take paces with like a string tied to your feet? I reckon he was 2 paces away from his phone.
Yeah.
So, it's like, is that a bulletproof vest?
So what's this about Charlie Berman?
No self-defense laws and bulletproof vest is illegal, but you can still go to the gun store and purchase yourself a Desert Eagle.
Ooh.
Strap on the side of me. Oh. Artist.
Nice.
Not that song. Spice One.
Okay.
Charlie Berman. You remember we talked about him quite a bit. Like, he's the guy whose case, you know, that Joe used as an example with Marlo. Like, look what they did to Charlie Berman, right? Like, back when they were trying to negotiate about the co-op and the birds were there. Anyways, he's just like a real life guy, but it's just crazy. Like when we were talking about it, how the like level of, you know, how nuanced the show is. Like, let's bring up one like obscure reference and he'll be the name, or maybe he didn't even mention it. It was just written on the stolen indictment.
Yeah.
And now it's like, oh, you know, Charlie Berman. And he was the real life drug dealing guy who was all like, oh yeah, I paid off this big Colonel Watkins guy like for years to sell drugs, but nah, I lied on the bill, psych. Or double psych. I mean, he's just crazy, dude. I don't know where he is. I mean, he's probably died in jail. I don't know. I really don't know. But just crazy stuff.
Level of detail.
Yeah, there. It's like 4 episodes ago in this season, we brought up an obscure, like, or we're now making a reference to the name that was just written on paper in the shot. Psychos, man.
Yeah, we're deserving of serious psychological study.
Yeah.
Just like Mick Nolte, who is like, no, we gotta tap the newspaper phones. Yeah. Yeah. And I'm going to kidnap a homeless guy and, use it. You know, I'm going to be my own version of a parasite with the homeless community.
Right. And so that our new goal? Instead of getting Simon to tweet us like, seek mental help, it's like, you are in need of serious psychological study.
Well, I don't know. Ed Burns wrote this episode. So
cool, man.
Could have been his line.
We should tweet him like, because Ed Burns is on Twitter, for sure. Ah, what a guy. Anyways, yeah, McNulty's, what's up with him? Like, does he kidnap homeless people to other music other than the Pogues?
No, that's it. I mean...
Was that the Pogues he was using?
Yeah, of course. It had to have been.
Because someone told him to do it, and okay, we're gonna have different of opinions, or you know, McNulty was blacked out. McNulty's hungover, kidnapping a homeless to the post because he was blacked out on Federal Hill talking to you say Major General
Samuel Smith. I mean, that's what was, like, they didn't even mention the name in the commentary. I had to look at the IMDb episode trivia for this.
Because in other synopsises, in other write-ups, they say it's General George Armistead who defended McHenry, Fort McHenry in 1812.
Oh, was that in Truth Be Told?
Yeah.
That's probably the more legitimate answer then.
Who knows, man? Looks like we got a conspiracy to get into. Don't, what? Back chat. I'll you leave that. Yeah, this is getting published. Okay. You know, to everyone who donated, like, whatever, you know, minimum's what, $5?
Yeah.
If you want these write ups, you could get exclusive episode outlines. You know, we'll determine a price, but all you need to know is that, you know, the price of said outline went up.
Yeah, just like the price of the brick.
Yes.
30 more.
Hey, man, these subscriptions to these databases don't pay themselves, man. The price of the subscript went up.
Yeah.
Did it? I should check my statement.
I'm always confused about, like, this whole plot that McNulty has with the homeless. Yes. It's like, since, like, he's in touch with Oscar... but like he's kind of shot himself in the foot by getting more media attention on these murders. So now whenever a homeless murder takes place, like everybody shows up to the scene. So he can't get in early enough to work his little magic. So he's like making people that look like the victims disappear with the red ribbon to kind of like, further along this whole idea that, you know, they're disappearing.
Yeah, I don't, because he takes Mr. Bobbles, or he like, he coaches him up to say like, oh, I'm from Baltimore, but the guy's ID was from Cleveland. But
it was a different guy. Yeah,
who's dead. So he's taking this, like he's giving a homeless dude a fake ID of a dead guy and taking him to a place where like, don't they have access to like a database in Richmond, or is that community center? Like she seems like really on top of it, the lady who worked there, but also like I can imagine just being overwhelmed and not like having time to research. But I mean, what if a news story came on that like, oh, I work at a homeless shelter, there's homeless people getting killed in Baltimore, which is not like, you know, it's far away but not that far. Like here's some tips to keep your homeless shelter safe. Oh, look at this guy who just died. Like, oh, that's that guy. What?
Yeah. I feel like when we get more into like this territory where we're like kind of scratching our heads, like, is this realistic? Like,
I mean, obviously we haven't had enough Jameson.
Yeah, we haven't had enough Jameson. And also it's like brings to mind when they're like talking about like, oh, this season is more like a satire than anything else, and it's going to be more outlandish than the previous seasons. Like, this has to be like one of the examples of that, where they're kind of, stretching credibility or like making us suspend our disbelief a little bit more. I don't know.
Well, that's why we afforded this show a serious psychological study.
There we go.
And the creators, you know?
Yeah.
Hey, what can you do? I mean, was this show designed for two weirdos to like break down each episode scene by scene? Or like how we watched it, probably. I mean, I know when I watched it the first few times, it's like, oh man, this is a great show. Have like a few Sierra Nevadas, pale ales, you know?
Yeah.
Maybe a case. It's great.
Still the best show ever made, though.
It's really good.
Yeah.
I'd say so. I mean, SportsCenter, it's not what it was, so I'll give The Wire. But nah. Talk about satire, man. That newsroom, full of it, right? And Klebanow is sucking Scott. Klebanow, I've been saying it wrong.
Cause, I guess so. Yeah.
Gus is like, Klebanow wanted this and that. So there's a whole lot happening here, where Whiting and all them are basically hijacking this like actual news story.
Yeah, about the education.
Yeah, and just going with the Dickensian aspect, which I know you're very familiar with.
The Dick Pickensian.
We're fucking. Yeah.
No, it's so funny.
Some pretty upsetting stuff with what is his name? Gus, you know, feeling like he has to sacrifice a real legit story about the failures of the educational system in favor of the homeless murderer. He's like maybe lighting up cigarettes in the newsroom as he talks to Whitey. But like,
what a gangster. Damn, it feels good to be a Gus gangster.
But he like actually does like have some positive words for Scott. Like he does like his story about the homeless former Marine. And he's like, yeah, man, you're doing great. No flowery prose, just tight declarative sentences.
Spitting.
But then at the same time, can you, you know, check on this woman who died of a seafood allergy? You might be bullshitting here. So,
Fletch. Was that Fletcher? Because I couldn't remember names too. Like,
yeah, do fake trout swim upstream?
Yeah,
what is with that?
I just was like trying to come up with, like, oh, what's an analogy? Like, oh, more train tracks with Scott. Like, what is, like, does that have anything to do with the whole, like, maybe I'll tell you what the train is, maybe I won't. And then it got me thinking, like, how can I incorporate fake trout and trains?
Yeah.
And then I was like, Scott, fake trout activities, like, you know, do fake trout swim upstream? Like, or, you know, because he's going against the grain in the newsroom. He's obviously, I mean, maybe he's not the only one making shit up, but he's like kind of forging his own path, like his own fake path. And, you know, is that technically, like, would that be considered swimming upstream? Because when fish, like, you know, trout maybe, or like, you know, you spawn, you go upstream. It's hard. It's like honorable. You're going up there to like lay your egg, like, you know, leave a part of you, and then it's over. You know, so what is Scott willing to sacrifice here? It's just selfish. And like Waylon said, you know, he's like, shame ain't, you know, as much as you think it is, like, as worth as much as you think or whatever. And then Scott's like, I'm taking that to the bank. Like, no shame in my game. Like, woo.
Yeah.
I mean, straight to the New York Times, baby.
It's just kind of sad that we witness like him, like, potentially getting like a scoop, like, you know, legitimate story with this Marine, but then, you know, like an episode or two down the line, we find out that he's really upset and frustrated that Scott took liberties with this story. So it's like, even when he does, like, you know, do the work of spending a night in a homeless encampment or whatever and observing the day to day, he still can't resist the urge to do that little, you know, it's in my notes.
It's my pipe.
It's in my notes. I was at CNI,
my notes. But yeah, shout out to Ziggy's Duck for pointing out this crazy ass comparison, like with Jen Kill and that guy being the Gunny Swore.
Yeah, I never
Delta
knew.
Force freaks. So great, great stuff.
Yeah,
pretty weird simulation stuff there. Because that's where, like, Bravo Company and Jen Kill, like, they went on to Fallujah, right? Or
wow,
maybe I'm tripping. So Gunny Swore went to war, like, continued on to Fallujah with that company, and, like, you know, got PTSD, which he doesn't really have, but, you know, that's not really Gunny, you know, he's just a homeless guy,
right?
But crazy parallels, like.
But I mean, woo. George Pelicanos did say, like, this was like the last episode Ed Burns wrote before he went to Africa, so it's probably just like all fresh in his mind. He's like, oh shit, I actually meant to write this scene for Generation Kill. Oh, well, maybe.
Yeah.
But
what's up with the Scott? I mean, he doesn't want to be the center of it.
what that a Nancy psycho. Grace interview is so trans. Like, when people talk about, like, oh, he has, you know, Tom McCarthy, handsome man, great actor, director, but he does have like one of those faces where it's just like so enraging sometimes. And it's like, oh, I don't want to be the center of attention. Like, come on, dude, we all can see your face.
Yeah. So what's up with Jimmy Breslin of Baltimore comparison?
So yeah, can you refresh my memory? When was that reference in the episode? Or,
oh, while they're watching him on Nancy Grace. Oh,
okay.
They're like, oh, they're saying, or like Nancy Grace said it, like, you're the Jimmy Breslin of Baltimore, like Son of Sam stuff. I'm not too familiar. Maybe I've seen it in like a crime show, you know, serial killer stuff.
Oh, yeah. So from the Wikipedia entry.
I love how you're like, refresh my memory. I'm just warming up the old computer in my mind to just recite like nonstop facts.
I just don't remember the specific reference in the episode, even though I watched it twice, to be honest.
for Willypedia.
In the Wikipedia entry on Jimmy Breslin controversies, author and former FBI agent Robert K. Ressler stated that Breslin baited Berkowitz, who is the Son of Sam, and irresponsibly contributed to the continuation of his murders by trying to sell sensationalist newspapers. In his book, Whoever Fights Monsters Wrestler condemns Breslin and the media for their involvement in encouraging serial killers by directing their activity with printed conjectures. So there's a little bit of contextualizing.
Oh, so like Nancy Grace was throwing shade at him? Like,
I guess so.
Like she knows what he's up to.
I guess so.
That's crazy, man. Thanks for sharing. Wolf tickets.
Yeah, no problem.
Good stuff, man. Got pretty dystopian.
Yeah. All right. Thank you for listening, everybody. As always, you can find us at The Gods Will Not Save You on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram.
Yeah, and thegodswillnotsaveyou@gmail.com if you prefer to communicate via email. Questions, comments, concerns, suggestions. You know, if you're listening, we'd love to hear from you.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, everybody.
Talk to you next time.